next for Nigeria's tech sector? It's 2 minutes past five. This is the business show for people doing real business. There's no up talk here. We talk about the biggest business stories and how they are affecting your business or the business that you work for. And we talk to real people doing real business. Today, we're still talking about the tech sector. We started the conversation last week and the time just flew by. We still had some ground to cover, and you still had more questions for our expert guest. So we're going to pick up from where we left off. Today's business hard fact is that CUDA announced that it raised $25 million in its Series A round. So immediately after Flutterwave shared their own big news, we also got great investment news from CUDA. CUDA is a Nigerian digital bank that are planning to expand to the whole of Africa. Then this week, we got news that Bankly is getting $2 million in investment, a $2 million investment. They are a fintech focused on the unbanked. They're basically taking Esusu Online or Akawo or Ajo, any of those ones that you know. So clearly, Flutterwave's success isn't an isolated incident. We're seeing more and more Nigerian startups getting international funding, entering the global market. And after last week's conversation, so many of you wanted to know more. Even during the show, Seb, I was getting your messages begging our guest to come back, and she very graciously agreed to do so. She's the co-founder of First Check Africa, an angel fund investing in the tech sector. Aloha, Omame. Welcome back to Balogun Broad on Hard Facts.
Hi, Sandra. Thanks for having me back.
Good. Lagos, I want to hear from you as well. What do you think is behind the growth and success of the Nigerian tech sector? If you work in tech, please call us and tell us what you do. Tell us how you started. If you just want to learn more about the tech business environment, call with your questions for Eloho. We're going to be taking mostly your questions today, so keep them coming, all right? I have just a few questions, and then the rest of the hour, we'll spend it answering your questions. So keep the questions coming. Eloho, CUDA's Series A round was big news last week. Vala Ventures led the investing, and they are a big deal in that world. So is it fair to read this as yet another sign that the world of venture capital sees Nigerian fintech as a goodbye?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we touched on some of the reasons why last week. I think, you know, for example, you referenced the fact that in CUDA's latest press, all the articles that have been written, they talk about building the digital bank for Africans everywhere. Mm-hmm. So clearly the vision and the goal has extended beyond building a Nigerian bank that serves Nigerians in Nigeria to across Africa. But I think last week we spoke about this idea that Nigeria really is a really strategically important market for Africa. And so the way that a lot of investors look at Nigeria is as a first step or a springboard into the rest of Africa, one. And there's also this notion that if you can get it right in Nigeria, and you can probably do okay in some of the other larger markets. So, you know, I'm a little bit unsurprised that the vision has shifted to Africa now. You know, remember the other thing we talked about last week was you talked about for investors who are, for VCs, venture capitalists, who are the people that startups will be raising capital from in order to generate the kinds of returns that they need to see, 100 times their capital, for example, 50 times their capital. That's sort of the big goal. They need big markets, big market opportunities, and they need high growth companies. So it's a little bit unsurprising, I guess, that our startups are increasingly ambitious. You see them thinking about building from Nigeria, but very quickly beyond Nigeria to capture other African markets.
So soon after announcing the big round, Flutterwave also announced a partnership with PayPal to let Nigerian vendors get paid from anywhere using PayPal. Now, clearly this means that suddenly Nigerian businesses will be better able to do business globally. What types of businesses do you think would benefit from moves like this?
Well, I think really it's anybody, well, there's two ways to look at it. It's anybody who's buying, anybody who's selling, right? If you think about the kinds of things we might be selling, I think one thing that we are increasingly good at is selling digital services, selling technology, services. We have a really strong and growing developer community mm-hmm. and a growing reputation globally for the fact that we have great developers in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. So this also means that even your developers working in a freelance capacity, they're able to pay and get paid a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. That's one example of the kinds of things that we might be selling. Mm-hmm. The other side of it, of course, is the buying, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have all kinds of businesses, SMEs, you know, individuals as well. But, you know, I guess a lot of the volume will be around the SMEs who need to buy stock. Mm-hmm. Who need to be able to pay efficiently. And it makes sense that they're able to use a global payments technology like PayPal. For me, I think it's fantastic because it really just opens Africa to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that GB or Flutterwave has been quoted as saying multiple times, that his goal with Flutterwave is to, he says, he always says Africa is not a country, mm-hmm. but our goal at Flutterwave is to make it feel like one. Mm-hmm. And again, vision has extended now beyond Africa, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, I think in his, again, in the press around that, there was some language around the fact that it's important that Africa as a whole stays connected economically to the rest of the world, and mm-hmm. tech and digital is how we do it. Mm-hmm. So I personally think it's a great, it's great for Flutterwave, obviously, but I think it's just great for our economies in general.
Lagos, call and ask Eloho Omame your questions about the tech sector and about the world of venture capital. Perhaps you want to become an angel investor as well. She's your girl. 0700-993-993-993. You can also call 01465-7190. That number is for our female callers only. 01465-7190. If for some reason you can't call in, please send your messages to us via WhatsApp. WhatsApp is 080-959-75805. Ask all the questions you have about the tech sector. Ask about the world of venture capital. We have somebody who called last week and was asking how they can attract investment for their startup. He tried to sell me the startup right on the show, and I was like, wait, calm down first. You have to pay me advertising fees. But let me talk to Ebuka Imushing first. Ebuka, how are you? Welcome.
I'm very fine. Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you. Good.
Oh, thanks to God. Quick one. Like, talking about these Flutterwaves and PayPal, and you see some importers, they will tell you before they get dollar, and at the same time, send documents to the producers, let's say China, you get, it is stressful. So what is the advantage of this FUDA in relation to these importers? They want to import something, want to send dollars. Mm. Like this application, Shaka, there's Shove, and other many great things out there, you know. When you look at their charges, they were like, for like dollar is 480 thereabouts. Then if you want to convert it to be 488 or 400, almost 500, naira per dollar. Then if you are trying to get it back, they will sell for you 476 naira there, but and we see you are losing. So what is this FUDA and other Flutterwave? What is the advantage to importers that is sending money in, like, let's say millions of naira to dollar? You get Sandra.
I get. Okay. All right, Ebuka. Thank you very much, Ebuka, for calling. Eloho, he's asking how the PayPal versus Flutterwave marriage helps importers who are buying from places like China, for instance.
I didn't quite hear his question, but I kind of heard some reference to rates and things like that. The way I view this is, and I don't know the specifics of what the experience is using PayPal if you're buying from China. You mentioned China. Mm-hmm. I don't know the specifics.
Yeah, he mentioned importing from China, yes.
Right. But I do know that it is to the importer's benefit to have many potential solutions around their ability to pay, right?
Right.
It is to their benefit to have the payments and the money, international money transfer operators competing for their volume.
Right.
Because all of that, in principle, should drive up service levels. Mm-hmm. Everybody should want to do it faster and quicker because that's how they win their business. Mm-hmm. And it should also drive down rates, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So now, like I said, I can't speak to the specifics of what Flutterwave's rates look like versus the next person or mm-hmm. PayPal's rather than Flutterwave pays versus the next person. Mm-hmm. What I can say is that, first of all, competition is great. Mm-hmm. So the more options that we can get around our ability to pay, etc., the better off the as are just at a systemic level.
Right.
Aside from that, I think the other thing that is the other thing to think about is that China is a very specific corridor, right?
Right.
But my My sense is, I mean, PayPal at this point is a global company.
That's right.
I imagine there are very few companies that can offer as many payment corridors with Nigeria
as PayPal.
So not everybody is buying and selling from China. Mm-hmm. Some people will be buying and selling from Turkey. Some people will be buying and selling from other markets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are probably advantages to them being able to then, you know, make those payments via PayPal, whereas perhaps previously
they
did not have to make direct payments in the way that they can today.
Mm-hmm.
So without commenting specifically on the China situation, mm-hmm. and I would say there, of course, it makes sense if he's a businessman that he looks at, you know, what the best rate is for him,
mm-hmm.
who will move faster.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of it is also sometimes you have accessibility. I don't know who you're buying from, but the vendor on the other side might say, we only accept PayPal.
Mm.
PayPal at this point is pretty global.
A lot of the vendors actually tell you, we only accept PayPal.
Right. So who knows, maybe it now opens up a bunch of other vendors that otherwise may have not been available to the importer, to the exporter or importer.
Right.
So I think I would look at payment services and cross-border payments as a basket, as a business person,
mm-hmm.
and say, look, maybe I'm better off using X for my payments when I'm going to China, but I might be better off using PayPal if I'm going to Turkey. I might be better off. And all of that is an advantage.
All right, let's take more calls. Our phone lines are blowing up. 99.3. Hello.
Good evening, Sandra.
Good evening. Thanks for calling. What's your name?
I'm very well. Olajide Felix. I called last Wednesday before Elon came on the show and I asked a question. My question was not answered.
Right. You're the one I was talking about earlier on.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yes. Do you want me to repeat the question again or you
remember? Yes, repeat the question. Go ahead.
Okay, so I said I have an existing platform. I actually started last year. And we currently have some growth on it. So I'm actually asking that from Elon. I even sent her a DM on Instagram. She hasn't checked on it, I think so. That how can I get a co-founder to, you know, move the fintech platform forward? Because right now it's just about 20-30% fintech. Or we're actually looking at going to fintech. So what do you advise that we do? And how do you get into a co-founder that we can actually push it forward?
So you're looking for a co-founder who can help you push your product forward, your tech forward?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Push it forward in what way?
And like to because we actually want to go into fintech. We are 2030 right now, but
what do you mean you're at 2030 and what do you mean full tech?
Okay, currently now on the platform we have like an e-wallet where people make a little deposit and they have like savings there. So we actually want to convert it to whereby that all subscribers can have like a savings platform where they can have an interest going on. But currently now they have the savings there, but there's nothing like an interest going on there. And the platform is growing day by day. So when I heard us speaking about, you know, fintech last week, I just thought, I think it's the right time for us to push this to full stack fintech, like what other tech companies are doing in Nigeria.
Right, Olajide, thank you very much for calling. I'm not quite sure I understood what he was asking, but Eloha, did you understand what he was asking?
I didn't hear all of it and I didn't fully understand it. I think, and I'm sorry, Olajide, if I misrepresent what you asked, but what I kind of gathered
mm-hmm.
was the tech is built up onto a point, mm-hmm. and they're trying to expand the capabilities of the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like he's saying, how do I find a co-founder who is, you know, has that technical capability to help me?
Yeah.
I don't think co-founders, I think the best co-founder relationships and the ones that we typically see are a little bit organic.
Mm.
You know, usually you will find that co-founders have had some interaction in some role in the past, or, you know, gone to school together, things like that. And those, at least the theory says that those are the best ways to find your co-founders, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not often very realistic for most people, for a lot of people, for multiple reasons.
Mm.
Especially in the case of when you're talking about a technical co-founder, right? Because that's a very particular skill set.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What I always advise people to do is to just do a bunch of research around who has built something similar to what I am looking to build, for example.
Okay.
You know, are you looking for a co-founder who is much more of an engineer and can be a software engineer and be a technical co-founder as for a CTO?
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking for not so technical, but perhaps a product person that can help you develop the product or the proposition?
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever that skill set is, map it with also experience, hopefully that is either pretty similar to, you know, building what you have built or is adjacent. So what I mean by that is, I don't know, you might be building, and I'm sorry, I didn't quite pick up what his startup was, but you might be building a wealth management platform, and you might say, and look, so wealth management, I want to buy shares, I want to buy, sell shares. And you might say, well, I'm going to, I can't find somebody who, because there's not many of those that exist in Nigeria today, mm-hmm. I can't find somebody who's done that, but I'm going to look for somebody that has built a fintech platform, mm-hmm. because a lot of operations perhaps that underlie it, I want to pay, I have, you know what I mean, the user interface, etc. There's lots of similarities there. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I would say in terms of the first way to think about it. But there's no kind of getting beyond the research around, look, who's done it, who's built it. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing, and then, you know, of course, talk to people, approach them, here's what I'm building, what do you think, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, woo them in the same way as you would do if you're building a network. Aside from that, the other way that I think about sort of a good place to find co-founders is in communities. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit hamstrung. I won't know the top of my mind the best communities outside of the communities that I focus on, which tend to be the female-focused ones. But for example, if somebody was looking for a female technical co-founder, I would say talk to somebody like She Code Africa and talk to them about the fact that I'm looking for a co-founder, this is what I'm trying to do, and they might be able to sort of point you in the direction of a couple of female, you know, engineers. We have very few of them.
So say that again, She Code Africa?
They're
so
on Twitter.
She Code, as in S-H-E and Code.
No, yes. S-H-E-C-O-D-E, Africa.
Africa.
It's one community I really like. But my point is there are communities like that. You'll have product, another one called Product Dive. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're looking for somebody that has product strength, mm-hmm. you want to develop the product, etc., you might start there and say, this is the kind of profile I'm looking for, help me. The other place, personally, I always look for, and this co-founder question is one that I try and keep a database of people. Mm-hmm. I look at people's Twitter, and I look at what they've done. I then go to their LinkedIn. I'm like, oh, interesting. And I file it in the back of my head. Mm-hmm. So I think the co-founder journey is not an easy one if you don't organically have people mm-hmm. who perhaps you have worked with mm-hmm. or you went to uni with, and you know their work, you trust them, you work well with them, because it's really important. But I think, you know, a bit of determined research, a bit of spending time in communities that are sort of dedicated towards tech people is it. And of course, being intentional and vocal about the fact I'm looking for a co-founder. A lot of people would say that.
Yeah. You'd be surprised what you find when you ask. Do you think there's a space for like a sort of matching platform, like a Tinder, for instance, for co-founders?
Co-founders. Look, I think the idea of matching is very interesting. And interestingly, one of the ideas that we've played with at First Check Africa is, can we have not so much a matching platform, but matching events where we say to people, are you looking to start a startup? Are you looking for a co-founder? And let's put people together depending on what it is they're trying to do. And I suspect that if you try to do a whole big platform, you would have issues because we still have, as much as, you know, we're doing really great in terms of our engineering talent, I think we still have relatively few engineers in the ecosystem as a whole. So I think very quickly you will end up, you know, having too much of one side.
One type. Right.
But, for sure, I think there are opportunities for as an ecosystem to think about events that match, that bring people together and express an interest around co-founding a startup or running a business.
You know, I find it's interesting that you say that the ecosystem still has too few engineers. So there are young people who are listening to you right now, and there are women, there are men who are listening to you, and they're wondering, when you say engineers, what do you mean, first of all? And second of all, well, if I'm already the sort of engineer you're talking about, how do I get in?
I mean, the first one is easier for me to answer. What I mean by an engineer is a coder, and it could be, you know, a developer. And there are different kinds of developers. There's a front end, all of these different kinds. What I mean, how would you get into the ecosystem? If you've trained as an engineer, you're in the ecosystem, right? Because you're working for a tech company, you're building technology, you may well have, you know, some affiliation with one of the existing tech companies in Nigeria outside. You might have worked at Endeavor, Andela. So you're within the ecosystem already. What I mean, I guess, by there's not enough is that we still, you know, one of the things I did at in my previous role, for example, at Endeavor, was I worked with founders who were building what we call hybrid startups. So startups that typically are sort of Series A, B onwards. And they would, you know, often say that some of the challenges that they have, once they, you know, they need to hire many engineers, mm-hmm. for example, mm-hmm. because there's so few engineers that, you know, it's hard to find the great ones because people are already doing other things.
Yeah.
The other thing that was really interesting, a lot of founders would tell us, was that finding female tech talent was always hard.
Hmm.
Female engineers, I beg your pardon. And again, we need more of those. So there's lots of will around, I want to hire female engineers, but we need to sort of, what's the word? Create the opportunities for them, unearth them. Hmm. So there are, again, communities that focus on supporting female engineers. There are programs that focus on bringing more women into tech.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose people in tech in general to become coders and developers.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, that challenge of once you get to a certain stage where you're a relatively large company in the ecosystem and you need to sort of hire more engineers,
mm-hmm.
A challenge that people face.
Do I have to have a university degree? So say I'm a young woman listening to you right now, and maybe I already have a university degree in, say, zoology or mass communication or law, but I'm seeing all this money being made in tech, and I'm like, I want me some of that. I want some of that money. Do I need to go back to the university and get a computer science degree or computer engineering degree or software engineering degree? Or is there like a way to jump the queue?
Yeah, you can learn various coding languages without going back to university.
Hmm.
You know, there are lots of what we call MOOCs online. What are they? Something online courses, something mm-hmm. open online courses.
Mm-hmm.
There are programs, there are companies like, and now I forget what it's called now, it's completely escaped me, but there are a couple of US-based companies, interestingly, that will train developers and train coders.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they don't take any money from you until you have graduated. It's all until you have a job, I beg your pardon,
mm-hmm.
and you're able to repay them. So there are ways to sort of become a developer
mm-hmm.
after that. As well through various programs. I think Google has a couple of programs as well. Mm. So no, you don't have to have graduated from university as a software engineer.
Mm. Okay, well, ladies, you're hearing the lady. Of course, if you want to get in there, they also have different programs for women, and she'll talk about that when we come back from this break. If you just joined us, you're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm also going to be asking her to talk a bit more, explain a bit more what a Series A is and a Series B is. You know, what are those? They're things we see around all the time on social media, in the news. What are they really? She'll talk about that after the break, as well as the work that First Check Africa is doing to empower more women in tech. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. A living, you probably own a business, work for one, or want to start one. Business is central to your life. But do most business shows really speak to you?
Today on the show, the $1 billion valuation of
Balogun Broad does. Let's talk about the stock market and Alaba market. Let's talk about share IPOs and diesel supply LPOs. Let's talk about Broad Street.
The Nigeria Stock Exchange recorded an all-time high of
and Balogun Street.
The maximum I'll spend on fuel, so on fro, was 4,000.
On Balogun Broad, Wednesdays at 5. What's next for Nigeria's tech sector? It's a business show. That's what Balogun Broad is. A business show for people who are doing real business. We talk about how the biggest stories of the day are affecting your business or the business that you work for. We also talk to real people doing real business. And I told you that we're still talking about the tech sector today, so we are still in Broad Street. And it's a conversation we started last week. And, you know, we're having such fun and the time flew by, but we've continued it today. And I started by telling you that CUDA announced that it raised $25 million in its Series A round. Now, you hear Series A and you're like, what's Series A round? And I've got Eloho Omame here to tell us what that is exactly. Eloho is the co-founder of First Check Africa. First Check Africa is an angel fund on investing in the tech sector. I hope you're watching this interview live on Facebook, Nigeria Info 99.3. We're streaming on YouTube as well, Nigeria Info FM. Aloha, what's Series A and Series B? What's the difference between all of that? Is there a Series C? Is there a Series D? Where does it end?
There is a Series C, there is a Series D, there is a Series E.
Oh.
I suppose technically, I mean, I don't know. I suspect that, I think I've seen Series Fs.
Oh.
It's not so good. But those really just are markers of the number of times that a company has raised capital, venture capital.
Hmm.
It usually starts from what we call a seed round.
Okay. What's that?
So we say it counts the number of times a company has raised institutional capital, I should say. And institutional means from an institution, so venture capital.
Okay.
Usually we start counting from a seed round because nowadays that is institutional. So a seed round, but there really is a little bit of what we call a pre-seed round usually. Some people call that a friends and family round. Some people call it friends, family, and fools. But your pre-seed round is really when you have an idea and you're trying to see if it works.
Mm.
And you're picking people, I have this great idea for this thing. I need a bit of capital just to build the first version, for example, of my app and to kind of see if it works and to test the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And usually people who are investing at that stage are angel investors or your friends, your family, and quote-unquote fools.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I suppose the fools, Monica, to be fair, is because there's such a high chance of failure.
Mm.
And that's...
So if I wanted to invest in somebody in a seed round, I should tell myself, this money now, maybe I just forget the money. If you come back, fine.
I'm even talking more so of a pre-seed round, which is when there's nothing.
Mm.
There's just a piece of paper and somebody is saying, Sandra, can I have $5,000 to test this idea?
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying to you, at that point, the judgment that you're making is, there's no product.
Mm-hmm.
So the judgment that you're making is Eloha the right person to take this idea,
mm-hmm.
test it, prove it, and build it in over time, build it over time into a product.
Mm.
But really, what you're investing in is me and my idea.
Mm.
Next is, and that, like I said, is usually angel funds, friends, family, and fools.
Mm-hmm.
The next is what we call a seed round, which is usually nowadays the first institutional round. So by institutional, I mean that we have what we call seed stage investors.
Okay.
So there, usually you have something that's called a minimum viable product. So people who might know the Nigeria tech ecosystem might be familiar with firms like MicroTraction, Ventures Platform.
Okay.
Those kinds of firms typically invest, I don't think exclusively, but typically invest in what we call the seed stage. So you have what we call a minimum viable product, which means that there's something out there in the market that mm-hmm. your users are engaging with.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not be paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
You may or may not be generating revenues from it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're already getting some insights from that minimum viable. So for example, let me make this tangible because I did a thread on it this morning on my Twitter. For example, your minimum viable product might be something as simple as a landing page.
Mm-hmm.
So you say to there's this great new product, here's my landing page, sign up everybody that wants. You find that you have 100,000 people that sign up because they want to use your product.
Mm-hmm.
That may well be enough for you to say, okay, I have a minimum viable product here, and then you have some kind of small prototype that doesn't involve heavy technology or heavy coding to develop
mm-hmm.
that people start to use
mm-hmm.
to prove or to test the idea that they have this small need
mm-hmm.
or this particular need rather that you're able to sort of meet with technology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we call a seed round. That can be institutional, but usually you have a very, very, very early version of the product
mm-hmm.
and you're still experimenting with how people will respond to it. So you mentioned CUDA,
mm-hmm.
the $10 million that they raised. CUDA has raised some pretty significant numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The $10 million that they raised was a seed round.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the first version of their banking product. I think they had, I don't know how many users they had, but I think they had a limited number of users and a limited number of people that could be users,
mm-hmm.
right? So they were able to test it,
mm-hmm.
test the bugs, test the kinks.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it worked,
mm-hmm.
make sure it was growing,
mm-hmm.
and get user feedback. And then once they had that, they opened it up and then they raised the next round,
mm-hmm.
which is a Series A.
Mm.
Now that's when we start counting. At Series A, you have a product.
Okay.
It is out there.
Okay.
It's an early version, but it's not a minimum viable product. It has a bunch of features
mm-hmm.
that your users have told you they want,
right.
and you have responded by building those.
Right.
So it's your first proper, feature-heavy version of your product.
Hmm.
And that's when we start counting as, that's what we mean by Series A. It's literally Series 1,
okay.
right? Because you've done a pre-seed, you may or may not have done a pre-seed, you've certainly done a seed,
mm-hmm.
And we start seeing Series 1. And then B, C, D, E is literally counting 2, 3, 4, 5.
So it's basically how many times you've tried to raise money for a particular product.
how many times you have successfully raised money.
Oh, okay. All right. So not tried, successfully.
So, right. So it's not a wave series. I think they did their series B. Mm. I think the 170 was their series B.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a seed round, which was their time at Y Combinator, which is the global accelerator.
Mm-hmm.
But I think another way was in was doing $150,000 checks. Then they raised a Series A. If I'm not mistaken, that Series A was about $13, $15 million.
Mm.
And they did that about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Mm.
And they've grown so much. So for you to go from one round to the next, you have to show what we call milestones or traction, which is really growth.
Mm.
So you have to be hitting a certain level of growth. You need to be hit. And it varies by industry. It varies by sector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the VCs kind of know what they want and what they need.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, roughly in the VC community, they'll say a Series A startup should be doing roughly this kind of volume, mm-hmm. this kind of user base, mm-hmm. this kind of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't come back to raise Series B unless you hit the metrics for Series B. Mm-hmm. You will not raise it on favorable terms anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of keep going. You raise out, there's no upper limit to, I suppose, in theory, there's no upper limit to how many series you can raise. I've never seen, I think I've seen one or two Series Fs. Usually, what happens is you want to get to a point where you're no longer going back to venture capital to keep funding your growth,
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually what happens is, you know, companies raise, I don't know, Series C, Series D, they stop. And then they start looking for capital outside. They, of course, over time, as the company matures, the growth, mm-hmm. you know, the tech company's high growth.
Mm-hmm.
As the company matures, the growth slows down.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually where they go next is a stock market, you know, to raise capital. So you don't usually see Series Z. I've never heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
After about Series D, Series E, what usually happens by the time a company gets to that stage is they're now... trying to list on a stock exchange.
Lagos, if you just joined the show, you're listening to Hard Facts. On Balogun Abroad, we take a look at business stories and how they affect you, who's the real business person. Now, if you work in the tech sector, I would love to hear from you. If you don't work in the tech sector, I'm curious what you think is behind the success and growth of the Nigerian tech sector. If you work in the tech sector, give us a call. Tell us what you do. Tell us how you got started. If you just want to learn more about the tech business environment, give us a call with your questions for Eloho. Eloho, say I have, let me not even call a price. Like, what's the minimum amount of money I need to be an investor, to be maybe an angel investor, maybe a VC? I don't know. How does that work? How does that part of the ecosystem work?
Yeah. So VCs and angel investors are similar in that they're both investing in tech companies.
Right.
Companies, high growth, high risk of failure. And right. They're looking for high returns to match that risk.
Mm-hmm.
They're different in that an angel is usually investing their own personal capital. And usually an angel is investing earlier. So for example, nowadays, sometimes you see angels in Series A. I'm starting to see that a bit more, but usually you see angels in what we call pre-seed. So idea on a napkin, or seed, which is, you know, what we call a minimum viable product stage of the business. And usually those are individuals. Now, what is the minimum you would need to do there? Well, I think even before you get to the point of a minimum, you need to be seeing deals. So you need to be within, you know, you need to have access to that community.
How do I get access to that community?
Well, you build relationships. So you build relationships with the founders, you build relationships with the investors, you build trust by also, you know, showing that you can add value to the founders' journeys usually.
Where do I find these communities? Is it social media, church, bars?
You know, I think as in any relationship, sometimes it can be really organic.
Okay.
But the way that I would think about it, if I were going to try and get into angel investing today, is I would figure out who are the main angels within our ecosystem. For example, the Lumide Shoyombo published his list, his investment portfolio, over the last 6 or 7 years. I think he had about 20 startups. I don't know if he's the most prolific angel investor that we have, but he's certainly one that's investing the most.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if somebody was trying to get in, maybe the first thing that you do is reach out to him, I imagine on Twitter, and say, hi, I really want to get into angel investing.
How much money do I need?
Right. There also, before I answer that, there are also a couple of other communities that are pooling capital for angels to invest. There's one called Radicap Global, which I'm a part of. And again, you can find them on Twitter.
Say that again. Your voice bleeped out a bit.
Radicap. RallyCap Global. RallyCap is a community. So different communities have their different rules and guidelines. Mm-hmm. RallyCap is for what we call operators, so people that have worked with startups, etc. But there are different people who are pooling capital and they're building their networks into investing in startups.
Mm.
So you build a community so that you know where the startups are raising, the startups trust you, they want you to be in there on their what we call cap tables, which is really who are my investors.
Mm.
How much do you need? I think it varies. It also depends on what stage you're investing in. If you're investing very, very, very early,
mm-hmm.
usually what you want, the founder is looking for is something to use to prove their idea. So they're not trying to raise at the pre-seed level.
Mm.
They're not normally trying to raise $5 million. Sometimes it's $100,000. And there are opportunities to invest $1,000 in those kinds of opportunities.
So $1,000 is around what these days? Over 500 grand?
It is.
Mm.
So angel investing, and I think, let's be clear, I'm comfortable with that because angel investing is, or investing in startups is something that is, we must be careful that we don't treat it as if it is stock market investing.
Mm.
There's a good chance that you will invest that check and you will never see the money again.
Mm.
The way that angels make, not to suggest that anybody goes away with your money, the idea doesn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
The way that angels typically lose to make look to make money is you're not writing just one angel check.
Mm-hmm.
You might be writing 15 mm-hmm. or 20.
Mm-hmm.
And the hope is that one of those checks is the one that goes on to be a flutter wave
mm-hmm.
or two or three, a very small proportion,
mm-hmm.
so that the profits that you make from that investment more than covers the fact that you've made, you know, significant losses or you've lost your money on most of the others.
Mm-hmm.
So angel investing, you know, in most jurisdictions, I'm sure in Nigeria, there are thresholds around you having to have a minimum high net worth to invest as an angel and things like that, or to at least be part of angel syndicates and things like that, because people, you know, it's an investor protection.
Right.
So that is certainly important. That said, I think there's a lot of interest and there's a lot of untapped capital in our ecosystem for investing in startups.
Right.
And I think as long as people are doing it with the right risk mindset, there are opportunities to reduce those minima so that people can write checks. But there are different groups that will, you know, they call themselves collectives that will pool money together. They have different minimum amounts. But I've seen people do as low as $1,000.
All right, then. We've got 5 minutes and then we got to go. But I have to ask you what you think about people who have expressed a concern that as the Naira loses value and our ecosystem's reputation grows, a lot of talent will choose to work on products and companies abroad, either by moving there or working remotely. Do you think that this could lead to a shortage of top-tier talent for Nigerian startups? Because remember, earlier on, we talked about the fact that the industry doesn't even have enough, engineers, for instance, to do the work that is required here. So do you think that this concern is valid? Could it lead to a shortage of top-tier talent for Nigerian startups?
I think it's a real risk, and I think it's the same risk, though, that we see in a bunch of other skilled labor that chooses in a hard economic environment or with a devaluation to move. So we see it all the time with doctors, we see it with nurses, everyone wants to move to Canada. We're seeing there's a new UK tech visa at the moment, people are going to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just the reality of, you know, people want a better life, people want to preserve their wealth, and, you know, trying to sort of play whack-a-mole with inflation is one of those things that is, we're just always going to have that issue unless we're able to build a stable environment and stable exchange rates. The good news is, with regards to tech talent, is two things. The culture, you reference remote work.
Mm-hmm.
There's tech, before we all went into a pandemic and we also were cool for sitting at home doing remote work,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the tech community was already used to that kind of idea of working remotely.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it came to developers and the coders.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, the ecosystem has already kind of developed this culture even before the last year and before these issues around pressures with our exchange rates of being able to work from anywhere in the world. And mm-hmm. frankly, working both sides. So our developers are able to source jobs from people who are building their products outside of Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And the flip side is our Nigerian startups are able to also source developers from other markets. I've seen people go to Ethiopia. I've seen people go to Latin America.
Mm.
you know, India. Just talent. Our exchange rate will not be any more competitive. I suppose we'll be less competitive against those geographies. But, you know, that because Nigerian developers are now looking to work abroad, that means that we have no access to developers. I think we need to sort of work in this global remote culture that the tech ecosystem has for a long time.
Eloha Mame will be back as a glass breaker because let me tell you, she's done amazing work in the tech sector, a sector that doesn't typically have a lot of women doing work in there. She's doing phenomenal work with First Check Africa. She told us about First Check Africa last week. Now, for those who were not listening last week, tell me again very quickly, you know, what you do and how you do it at First Check Africa.
So First Check is an angel fund co-founded by myself and Odunrewemihi, who is the co-founder of PiggyVest. And we are investing in the very early stages. So we call ourselves early believers for women that want to build tech startups or diverse teams. So teams that include women and you have women in important decision-making roles within the co-founding teams. So we're writing those pre-seed checks in the hope that they can build those ideas into viable, investable technology propositions. Our big goal, our big hairy audacious goal is to put a dent into that sort of less than 5% number. So less than 5% of capital goes to women in startups. We're hoping that we can make a few moves that help to shift that number.
All right then, she is the co-founder, like you just heard, of First Check Africa. Eloha Mame, thank you so much for giving us your time this week. We had a great time and we were able to touch a number of subjects. So I loved that, and her internet behaved today, so yay. But she'll be back sometime in April as our glass breaker, because women need role models in the world of tech, and Eloho is one of those. Eloho, thank you so much for your time.
Sandra, take care.
All right, Lagos, let me give you a chance to win some money on Just a Minute.